Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the LVMH 2019 first quarter revenue conference call. I will now hand over to Mr. Chris Hollis. Sir, please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Chris Hollis, Director of Financial Communications at LVMH. With me is Jean-Jacques Guillemot, our Chief Financial Officer. Thank you for joining us. We have some remarks to make about LVMH's revenue for the first quarter of 2019. As in previous periods, these revenue figures are reported in accordance with the IFRS. After these remarks, Jean-Jacques and I will be happy to answer your questions. Before I begin, I must remind you that certain information to be discussed on today's call is forward-looking and is subject to important risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially. For these, I refer you to the safe harbor statement included in our press release and on slide two of our presentation, which is on the website. Turning now to our announcement. Hopefully, you've all had the chance to read our release, which was issued yesterday in both French and English. As always, the release is available on the website, www.lvmh.com, as are the slides that we are using to guide today's call. Turning to slide three of that presentation. Performance in the first quarter reflected a strong start to 2019 as we continued to deliver double-digit organic growth. All business groups and regions contributed to our organic growth, which was further boosted by a positive currency effect. We saw strong momentum across the board, with wines and spirits delivering good performance, continued very positive trends at Louis Vuitton and Christian Dior Couture, and steady growth within our perfumes and cosmetics brands, driven by makeup in Asia. Within our watches and jewelry segment, Bulgari saw solid progress and positive performance continued in selective retailing at both Sephora and DFS. I also want to touch on the Belmond acquisition, which we announced in December. We are pleased that its shareholders approved the transaction in February, and we are on track to close before the end of June. Turning to the overall numbers for the first quarter, this is slide four. Total revenue rose 16% on a reported basis to 12.5 billion euros from 10.9 billion euros in the year ago period. This reflects an 11% rise in organic revenue, along with a 5% positive currency effect. Our revenue mix continues to be well-balanced across geographies. As you can see on the chart, Asia, excluding Japan, was the largest region in the first quarter, representing 35% of revenue as measured in euros. This is followed by Europe, including France at 25%, and the U.S., including Hawaii at 22%. France specifically contributed 8% of revenue, and Japan was at 7%. Other markets contributed 11% of revenue. Compared to last year, Asia gained 2 points from Europe, in part due to currencies, but also due to its higher growth, as we'll see on the next slide six. In terms of revenue change by region compared to last year's first quarter, organic revenue rose double digits in Asia, excluding Japan, at 17%, and in all other regions, it grew at high single digits. Japan at 9%, the U.S., excluding Hawaii, at 8%, and Europe at 7%, all on an organic basis. Looking now at revenue by business group, I'll start as usual with wines and spirits. Organic revenue was up 9% for the quarter, and after a positive currency effect, reported revenue was up 13% to 1.3 billion euros. By category, champagne and wines, organic revenue increased 6%, and after including a positive 2% currency impact, reached 458 million euros in the first quarter of this year, up 8% compared to the year ago period. For cognac and spirits, organic revenue grew an impressive 11%, and adding the positive 5% currency effect, reached 891 million euros, up 15% from the year-ago first quarter. To give you some more color on our champagne and wines, we saw good revenue growth in all regions, driven by improved price mix, which reflects their value creation strategy. While champagne volumes were stable, our prestige cuvées outperformed. Estates and wines performance was driven by a positive price effect. Turning to cognac and spirits, Hennessy volumes were up 11%, due primarily to strong sales of VS and VSOP. This activity saw continued strong demand and some restocking in the US. In China, the momentum continued with customers favoring larger formats of VSOP during Chinese New Year. Finally, both Zemeranji and Ardbeg made progress notably in the US and Asian markets in the quarter. As I say, most years, this is a relatively small quarter for this business group and therefore not a representative quarter from which to extrapolate trends. Looking now at fashion and leather goods, this business group was up a strong 15% on an organic basis. On a reported basis, including a 5% positive currency effect, revenue was up 20%, reaching 5.1 billion euros from 4.3 billion in last year's first quarter. To give you some highlights, we're now on slide 10 of the quarter in this business group. Overall, we delivered strong growth in the key markets of Asia and the US, supported by solid growth in Europe. In fact, double digit in all these regions. Looking in more detail at the brands, Louis Vuitton continued its remarkable momentum, building on the success of its iconic lines and the introduction of new products. In addition, the brand reopened new stores after major renovations in Florence, London, Monaco, and Shanghai's IFC Mall. And a new workshop opened this year. That's the 16th in France, to support the increased demand. Christian Dior Couture enjoyed exceptional performance in all regions and across product categories. The brand's men's and women's runway shows were also very well received. And a new exhibit about the storied Maison is now on view at the London's prestigious Victoria and Albert Museum. Fendi hosted its last runway show, designed by Karl Lagerfeld in Milan, and Celine's first ready-to-wear collection, designed by Heidi Slimane, arrived in stores in March. Celine also successfully launched a new store concept in Paris and New York. Laura Piana's Lacuna collection and shoes showed good performance, while Loewe showcased its first men's runway show by Jonathan Anderson in Paris and saw great success with its limited edition Dumbo-inspired collection. And finally, Rimowa inaugurated its first flagship store in Japan's Ginza district and rolled out a new collaboration with artist Alex Israel. Perfumes and Cosmetics business group, revenue was up 9% on an organic basis. On a reported basis, revenue reached 1.7 billion euros, up 12%, including a 3% positive currency impact effect from the 1.5 billion in the year ago period. Across the board in this group, we saw growth of iconic brands with solid momentum in Asia. Consistent with this, Parfum Christian Dior saw strong popularity of its iconic lines, as well as its newly launched Joy perfume. Its makeup and skincare performed particularly well, driven by Rouge Dior and Dior Skin. Guerlain also contributed to positive performance in the first quarter through the launch of Mon Guerlain Plume de Rose perfume and L'Essentiel foundation. In addition, the brand saw continued momentum of its Abaye Royale skincare and Rouge lipstick. Parfum Givenchy's L'Interdit performed well as the brand continued to see progress in its makeup lines, including with Le Rouge and Prism Vivre. Kenzo launched Flower by Kenzo Eau de Vie, while Acqua di Parma introduced a new collection under the name Barbiere. Finally, Fenty Beauty by Rihanna continued to successfully roll out internationally, building on the robust performance the brand has experienced to date. Now, looking at our watches and jewelry business, slide 13, organic revenue was up 4% in the period, including a positive 5% currency effect. Reported revenue for the group was up 9% to over €1 billion compared to €959 million in the first quarter last year. This business group had good momentum in jewellery, as well as at Hublot and Zenith on the watch side. Starting with jewellery, Bulgari demonstrated strong progress, driven by its recently launched Forever line, as well as the continued popularity of its emblematic Serpenti and Diva Dreams lines. This year, the brand also started the celebrations of the 20th anniversary of the B01 ring. This all helped the good performance of its own stores during the period. Chaumet introduced a new collection called Lien Evidence, and it opened a temporary boutique on the Boulevard Saint-Germain during the restoration of its historic Place Vendôme boutique. With respect to the watch brands, we once again had a successful participation in Baselworld this year, at which we introduced a number of new models. Bulgari launched the Serpenti Sedutori watch and the Octo Finissimo watches, chronograph GMT automatic and ceramics. Both of these latter watches set world records for their thinness. Hublot introduced a new classic Fusion Ferrari GT, which connects watchmaking, motorization, and automotive design, whilst its robust growth was driven by the spirit of Big Bang and its retail stores. TAG launched a golf edition of its connected watch that features an app developed specifically for golfers. And finally, Zenith showcased its new Defy Inventor and Defy El Primero 21 carbon watches. The Selective Retail Group reported an 8% rise in organic revenue. When we add the 5% positive currency effect, this brings us to a 13% on a reported basis. Sales for the quarter rose to €3.5 billion from €3.1 billion in the year-ago period. To give you some detail behind these numbers, Sephora saw further market share gains and drove exceptional comparable store revenue growth in Asia. The brand also continued its rapid growth of online sales worldwide and opened a store location in New York's newest development area called Hudson Yards. On the DFS front, we saw strong momentum in Hong Kong and Macau, as well as RT Fondaco de Tedeschi Galleria in Venice. In this business, beauty outperformed other product categories in the quarter. DFS also hosted the 8th annual edition of the Masters of Wines and Spirits in Singapore in partnership with Changi Airport Group. And the newest Galleria location is under construction as we speak at La Samaritaine in Paris, which is slated to open in 2020. So overall, our brands had a strong start to the year with all business groups and regions contributing to organic growth in the quarter. As we move forward, we continue to focus on creating innovative, high-quality products while selectively expanding our store network and managing costs. Against a persisting uncertain backdrop, the group will maintain a cautious outlook for the rest of the year while we continue to pursue our mission to reinforce our position as the world leader in luxury goods. Thank you. And with that, we'll now take any questions that you might have. Clotilde, please could you open the line?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, you may press 01 on your telephone keypad. We have one first question from Mr. Edouard Aubin for Morgan Stanley. Sir, please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, Jean-Jacques and Chris. I guess two questions for me. The first one on Vuitton, if you could please come back on what were the main drivers behind Vuitton's better than expected top line over the past 6 months. And I guess, you know, distribution, communication, product, that obviously they all played a part. But if, in your opinion, what were the two or three main drivers, if you could please try to narrow it down for us? And my second question relates to Sephora. As you predicted earlier in the year, the top line reaccelerated in the first quarter after the weak end of the year. Is it mostly a function of higher couponing promotional activity in the U.S.? And if so, is there, so to speak, a higher, you know, pay-to-play in the U.S. given the now structurally more competitive U.S. cosmetic market?
Thank you, Edouard. On the first question, which is not the easiest to answer, the main drivers, you mentioned it, it's obviously a combination of marketing, product, and distribution strategies. It's also a function of the strengths in demand. And we have to say that demand, particularly in China, but not only in China, I mean, demand has been very strong throughout the world. We've seen double digit numbers with Japanese, which as you know, is something that we hadn't seen for a while. With the American, I would say it's more business as usual because we've been growing double digit with American for a long time, but still we have very strong numbers with Americans, and finally with the Chinese, the business is really moving from strength to strength. So I would say that the strengths in the demand combined with strategies from a product and a distribution viewpoint that makes sense for most of this client base explain the success of Vuitton and what you call a surprising good trend, which we call the result of our effort. But anyway, at the end of the day, we enjoy a good ride with Vuitton. That's no doubt about that. As far as Sephora is concerned, yes, the Q1 numbers were better, significantly better than Q4. Q1 is traditionally a less promotional period than Q4 or Q2. So the answer is definitely no. The level of promotional activity was not any higher than it was in the preceding year. We just ended up with a little bit of a better market, I would say.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have another question from Mr. Antoine Bell from HSBC. Sir, please go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon. It's Antoine Bell at HSBC. Three questions. First of all, there's been a very strong growth in Asia, so which would point to a further repatriation of growth from Chinese consumption to more local. So, would it be possible to have the overall share of your of the Louis Vuitton business done with Chinese, and maybe what was the split in Q1 19 local versus versus tourists, and maybe is there a margin implication due to that trend? Second question relates to the US, where I think in Cognac you've mentioned a restocking impact. So could you comment a little bit about that, about the level of inventories, and also I think you, Chris, mentioned that we shouldn't expect this trend to be sustainable, so maybe a further comment on that. And finally, within the perfume and cosmetic business, I think you mentioned a lot of reason why it seems that Dior outperformed, so the overall division was probably dragged by one or two brands. Would it be possible for you to mention the names of these one or two brands which are dragging down the overall performance? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Antoine, for your three questions. Well, the first one is fairly precise, and we don't get usually into that type of detail. You mentioned, nevertheless, repatriation of business onto domestic China, which is true, but it's mainly done at the expense of markets surrounding China and not European markets. If we look at what happened in Q1, the European markets, particularly with Chinese, were pretty strong and in the same type of growth as we had seen before. Where we've seen some slowing down is in some markets like Macau and Hong Kong, not so much in Korea, although the domestic part in Korea offset a slowdown in the touristic part of Korea. But at the end of the day, the non-China Asia was slowing down, whereas obviously China was picking up. So we had really stability of growth in Europe, increasing growth in China, and slowdown outside China in the rest of Asia. These are the trends for most of the luxury brands, and particularly Vuitton. So for most of the fashion leather, sorry, and particularly for Vuitton. The breakdown, I mean, the share of Chinese customers has not changed in a tremendous way over the past few years, and the share of tourists versus locals has not changed either very much. I mean, even a difference in growth rate doesn't cause this breakdown to shift quickly and immediately. So nothing really to report there. The second question on Cognac. So yes, there was a restocking in Cognac. We took the decision, given the strength of the supply at the end of last year with a good harvest in 2018, we had enough, we have bought enough eau de vie so that we could release some volumes. And as you know, we ended the year in 2017 and 2018 with a very, very low level of stocks, particularly in the US, with distributors, we were around 20 days. And we took the decision to increase this level of inventories so that those distributors could work in a much better environment when they operate at 20 days. I mean, it's, their life is quite complicated. So we have put some gasoline, I would say, in the engine, and inventories now are a little bit in excess of 40 days. So it's way below normal anyway, but it's a better level. So consequently, sell-in is higher than sell-out. It is particularly the case this quarter in the US, as the sell-out last year in March was particularly strong as we implemented price increases early April last year. So traditionally, when there is a price increase, depletions 4 weeks ahead of the price increase are extremely high, which is not the case this year, as the price increase will take place only in June. So by comparison, we have a very high sellout month last year and a normal sellout month this year. But all in all, higher sell-in than sell-out, nothing to worry about. Neither the sell-in nor the sell-out are worrying, but the normal management of a very important market for us. And thirdly, your question on perfume and cosmetic and the name of the winners, you know how much we like to point out winners and losers, if there is such a word, within our portfolios. So I will not get into details. The only hint I will give you is that the big chunk of the growth in perfume and cosmetic comes from Asia and from China in particular, and travel retail as well. And you know that the traditional brands are the ones like Dior, Guerlain, Givenchy are much stronger in Asia and in travel retail than our US-based brands. So it's really these traditional brands leading the the growth.
Okay, just maybe a follow-up on you know the repatriation of growth in China. Any margin implication we should be aware of?
No, I told many times that particularly at Vuitton, margins are very comparable from one market to another. So whether the business takes place one place or another doesn't make any difference at the end of the day for us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. So we have another question from Mr. Lucas Olka for Bernstein. Sir, please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I was wondering about the pipeline of eau de vie for what concerns Cognac. Are we correct to understand that the inventory concerns that we had a while ago are now resolved, or there could be further problems down the road? Then on Céline, I wonder if you have any update on how the market reception of the new Céline approach to fashion under Hedi Slimane is going. We're getting mixed reviews from our contacts. And then last but not least, you were referring to Baselworld, and there was a lot of discussion this year in Basel on how and if this exhibition will continue in the future. Are you continuing to commit to Baselworld, or are you anticipating new ways of presenting your watch collections in the future? And then if I may add a little one, if you could expand a little on the Belmond strategy and value creation approach you have in mind. Thank you very much.
That's a little one. Thank you, Luca. So starting with the V in Cognac, the real answer to your question is no. We have not fully lifted our constraints in terms of eau-de-vie supply. You remember that the harvest in 16 and 17 were extremely bad, which caused the supply of eau-de-vie to curve down significantly, particularly in the second half of last year. Obviously, with a good harvest in 18, this gives us a little bit of headroom. And what we have done in the first quarter of the year was more market monitoring and supply management rather than proof that the pressure from supply is alleviating to an extent that we can shoot for much higher gross rate. So I'm not saying we'll be having low single-digit numbers, but don't expect more than mid-single-digit for this business. As you know, it's very difficult to grow such a inventory-intensive business more than 5%. That's probably the maximum we can expect. It was under severe pressure last year. Pressure is less bad than it used to be, but 5% is certainly the maximum that we can do this year and next year. So the first part of the year was extremely positive for various reasons, including what I described in the US, but also the fact that Chinese New Year took place at a different date than it did than it did last year. So it was a different phasing of business altogether. But at the end of the day, as Chris said, don't expect the current trends to don't extrapolate them into the rest of the year. The question on Céline, I will not answer. As you know, we are at the time as we speak putting in place the spring summer collection in the stores. So it would be very unfair to comment at a time when it's just the beginning of it. You mentioned that you got mixed reports or reviews. Actually, we don't. We had a very, very good runaway show in late Feb, early March, and we got nothing in terms of mixed review for that. All the reviews were extremely positive. So we remain extremely optimistic as far as Céline is concerned, but it's only too early to comment. As far as Baselworld is concerned, I have nothing to announce. I mean, we are not the biggest player in this universe. You have seen the action taken by the others, not only this year but over the last few years, which are obviously a reason for us to think about it. But we have not taken any decision and have nothing to announce. As far as Belmont strategy is concerned, what I can say about this is we'll be focusing on internal growth. We feel that in accordance with management, that many properties in the Belmont portfolio can develop further their profitability potential, and we will concentrate on that. And we expect to generate significant EBIT and EBITDA growth in the next few years just by focusing on optimization of existing properties. So we don't rule out acquiring properties here and there, but not in a significant way. The main focus will definitely be on existing ones.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jean-Jacques.
Thank you, sir. We have another question from Mr. David Damaya for CMC. Sir, please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. The first on fashion and leather. I know you don't disclose performance by brand, but maybe can give us more indications on which are the brands that are currently outperforming the most amongst your biggest brands. I mean, do you want to highlight a particularly strong performance from one of your star brands during the quarter, or the growth has been well balanced between them? And the second question on Vuitton. So the creative momentum is clearly impressive. You mentioned strong growth in all businesses, but have you more recently recorded an acceleration in growth in some specific product categories, for example, ready-to-wear or even shoes? Thank you.
Thank you, David. We don't like so much to comment on the relative performance of brands. The whole portfolio did very well, as you see from the global numbers. Some some brands like Christian Dior and Vuitton did particularly well. I would say that doesn't mean that the others are doing badly. I mean, overall, we are extremely satisfied with the global performance of the portfolio, and I don't intend, as I said before, to give good marks and bad marks to some of the brands. That's not what we do in this call. As far as LV is concerned, say. All the categories did very well. Some did better than others. Just to mention ready-to-wear, both men ready-to-wear and women ready-to-wear had an outstanding Q1. This is not isolated. Last year, this business was already very good, but it is particularly good this year. It's not a major business altogether for us at Vuitton, but it's worth pointing out, as this is obviously a traffic generator for many stores, and we are very happy to see that this business is doing particularly well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have another question from Madame Atia Verada from Avior. Madame, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my questions. I've got three questions. The first one is on the watches and jewelry division. Can you maybe comment on the growth of watches versus jewelry? And then the second question is still linked to watches. Can you maybe just elaborate a little bit on the performance of own stores versus that of third-party retailers? And then the third question is on growth by nationality. Can you maybe give us an indication of like the key nationalities and the trends there? So Chinese, the US, European, and Japanese. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I'll start with the last question, which we basically cannot answer because we are a wholesale business. And therefore, it's hard for us to monitor who our clients are selling to. So by nationality, it's very difficult to do. The only thing I would say is that our business is doing better in the eastern part of the world than in the western part of the world. So it probably tells something about which countries are doing better than others. But the monitoring of nationalities in the same way as we do it in retail business is impossible in this business. So as far as your first question is concerned, watches versus jewelry, like preceding quarters, the jewelry business is doing better than watches. Watches has been under pressure for some time. We are repositioning Tag Heuer. We commented that many times already. This comes with growth being under pressure as Tag Heuer, as it's been the case in preceding quarters, and watch jewelry are doing much better, particularly Bulgari, where we were where we registered the low double-digit growth, which is worth pointing out in the current environment. As far as own stores in watches are concerned, they are doing better than the wholesale business. To be frank, I'm not so sure that our statistics are that significant. We don't have that many own stores within our own with our own distribution within the global watches business. It's about 15% of total, but for what it's worth, this business is doing better than the wholesale business.
Thank you. Maybe just to follow up on that. So maybe, you know, in terms of the difference category, so fashion and leather versus your watches, why is there, you know, the significant underperformance at your watch, at generally in watch brands versus, you know, I just want your opinion on that.
Well, it's very difficult to say. I think it's by and large demand driven. And we've seen demand being strong in fashion and leather in all geographies for quite some time. It's been the case in Japan, it's been the case in Europe, it's been the case in the US, and obviously in Asia, including China. As far as watches are concerned, the main driver of the growth, and I take a sort of 10 years view, has been China. And China had some significant slowdown as the rest of the categories in 2014, from 2014 onwards, which has not recovered in the same way as the other categories since then. So I think it's mainly demand driven, with a high concentration of growth onto the Chinese customers that have proven less, that have rebounded less than the than it's been the case in other categories.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, madam. So we have another question from Mr. Olivier Chen from Coven Company. Sir, please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Regarding Sephora, where do you see, you know, e-commerce profitability and penetration, you know, going over time? And we had a question on Bhutan and e-commerce and digital. What are your thoughts about inventory management between the online and the physical store channel and where that is, and how you're thinking about integrating mobile plus stores and relationships with platforms such as Farfetch and others? Thank you.
Thank you. I feel a bit embarrassed about your first question. What I can say is that going forward, we expect both penetration and profitability of digital and online at Sephora to go up. That you would have been surprised if I've said the opposite. Profitability for the time being within digital altogether is higher, slightly higher than it is with brick and mortar, and we expect this profitability going forward to remain higher. And the growth rate we have in digital is also higher than the growth rate in brick and mortar. So logically, we expect both penetration and profitability to go up in the future. Your second question is, I would say, very important and very relevant question. Unfortunately, it's hard for me to answer because it's something we are currently reviewing and discussing internally. It's a very important topic. What do we do with our inventories, and do we make this available to platforms? But no decision has been taken yet, at least for our largest brand. So I really cannot answer on this. The only thing I can say is it's a relevant question, and we'll have to come to some views on this in the quite near future.
Okay. On the Sephora, thank you. Has the U.S. has experienced negative physical store traffic offset by conversion rates. Has that also been true for your U.S. Sephora business? And I would love thoughts on category strength. We've seen skincare, you know, improve, where cosmetics has faced tough comparisons. How are you thinking about the portfolio in the context of managing the categories, you know, within Sephora U.S.?
That's a good point. Well, traffic is still in very low growth or slightly negative, and conversion rate is going up, which is usually what happens. I mean, we have probably more relevant customers in our stores, and therefore we have less traffic and higher conversion rate. At the end of the day, I mean, this really the two going together. It doesn't mean that we cannot grow the business. The business is just done slightly differently. As far as categories is concerned, the makeup category is a little bit under pressure in the US. It's been the case for the last 12 months, I would say. And the skincare business, which is really growing fast and gaining in importance at Sephora, not only from a share of total business, but also from a shelf space viewpoint, I would say. So I feel that in the coming months and years, the skincare business will be a very important component of Sephora's growth in the US and probably elsewhere as well.
Okay, just last question on Sephora. One question and one observation is that you've done a very good job across formats and sizes, and having, you know, versatility and flexibility in how you think about physical retail within the Sephora banner. Congrats on Hudson Yard. What are your thoughts about store format and the right size, and how you're approaching prudent square footage growth in terms of doing that in an experiential manner, you know, for the new customer, and also as we see different kinds of real estate emerge within retailing in the U.S.?
Well, that's a very good point. The only way to answer your question is what we do basically is to test and learn. We are opening different formats particularly in the US, smaller formats, different opening hours, and we see what happens. I mean, there is no such thing as a theory as to what is the right format of a Sephora store in the US. It's only experience that will tell us what we should be doing. So to the credit of the team, they are experiencing new formats, testing, and trying to learn what could be the winning formulas and deploy them on a larger scale in the future. It's what we've always done. Sephora, particularly in the US, is not one single format. It's several formats, including JCPenney, the .com, and the brick and mortar. And within brick and mortar, we have a different expression of the brand, and we will continue to do so. It's way too early to tell you what kind of format may emerge in the future, but Sephora is constantly on the test and learn exercise.
Thank you. Best regards.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have another question from Mr. Rogério Fujimori from RBC. Marcus, sir, please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jean-Jacques. Hi, Chris. Can I ask a question about regional growth for fashion and leather? How do the regional growth for fashion and leather compare to the total group growth mentioned in slide 6? The second, if you could talk a little bit about the total Chinese cluster growth in Q1. And as drivers of the strong growth of Vuitton in Q1, any change in terms of contribution from volume versus ASP change? Thank you.
Thank you, Rogério. Well, the fashion leather versus group on a regional basis, roughly speaking, fashion and leather, which, as you've seen from the group's numbers, growth is higher than the global group's growth. It's exactly the same in all regions. So we have fashion leather being significantly above in Europe, more or less in line, a little bit above in Japan, significantly above in the US, and as well a bit above in Asia. So that's the main trend. As far as volume versus price and mix at Vuitton, as in the preceding quarter, the bulk of the growth comes from volumes. Volumes are up double digits at Vuitton. There is a little bit of price, but nothing really significant, as we have not passed any price increase this year. So a little bit of lagging impact from last year's price increase, but nothing really significant. And as always, a little bit of mix impact, but really the bulk comes from volumes. And sorry, there was another question.
China cluster of Q1 for Louis Vuitton.
So the Chinese customer for Vuitton in Q1 was up double digit, more or less in line with in line with what we've seen in preceding quarters. So the same type of growth as we have seen precedently.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have another question from Mrs. Dana Tesley from TAG Group. Madam, please go ahead.
Good morning or good afternoon, and congratulations on the progress. You talked a little bit about tourist trends. Any more color in terms of what you're seeing by region, where people are traveling to and from, and what you're seeing? And then on the remodeled stores that you've done for Louis Vuitton, what have you seen that's been impactful that you'll put in other stores that may be of the experiential nature? Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the touristic trend, not much to be added to what I said before. We've seen, the traffic is extremely high throughout Asia, but when it comes particularly to the most expensive items, due to the fact that price gap in between Asia and China have narrowed significantly, we see less growth and less business being done outside China. As far as Europe is concerned, as I said, globally the business is pretty good with tourists. We see a little bit of pressure in France with the unrest on Saturdays, which is a little bit taking its toll. Although we are still positive in France for all the brands. And I think conversely, we see a very good activity in the UK. So the UK in Q1 has been stronger than we thought. It's probably a little bit at the expense of France. But altogether, Europe is extremely satisfactory, and we still keep a high level of touristic flows in Europe. As far as the remodeling of LV stores is concerned, obviously we implement good ideas from one store to another. The only point I would make, it's very difficult to be specific on your questions because there are plenty of examples of a small magnitude that could be described, but I don't think that would be very significant to comment on this call. The only thing I would say is that the main retail initiative at Vuitton and in some other brands is the pop-up stores. I mean, that's something that we have developed over the last couple of years. We shall do about 100 pop-up stores in 2019 after 80 last year. And this is the privileged way and the main way to drive innovation and newness from a pure retail viewpoint into in front of the customer. So this trend of pop-up stores is extremely important, and we will continue in developing that because it enables us to be talking in a different way to our clients in different places, and that's very very important, and it adds flexibility to a retail network which by definition is a bit rigid, and it enables us to be in different places at different times.
Thank you.
Thank you, madam. Next question from Mrs. Louise Singerhurst from Goldman Sachs. Madam, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Hi, Chris. Hi, Jean-Jacques. Two questions, really, on back to LV for me, please. I'll be quick. Just in terms of, can you help us think about how you consider really the pace of growth? Because obviously we're seeing some really large growth numbers on a very large brand, but I suppose if we can think about the context of fashion and leather, but particularly for the brand in terms of the budget process, but also managing the manufacturing process, given so much is internalized. If you could help us just think about that balance or growth equation, that would be really helpful. And then secondly, a small one, is there anything particularly to call out by product category? Obviously, menswear quite small, but doing phenomenally well with Virgil Abloh. And online, if you can give us any context, if it's particularly important in terms of the underlying percentage of sales now. I know it's small, but if it's obviously growing quite well. Thank you.
Thank you, Louise. Your question on really the supply chain of fast-growing brands like LV is obviously a very important question for us. As you know, we have a very high level of vertical integration, so that creates some form of constraints in terms of meeting a very high demand. The flexibility of internal production is not the same as the production that is subcontracted. Nevertheless, I have to the credit of Vuitton, and it didn't start yesterday. I mean, they've been working on that for quite a number of years, and the production and supply chain people of Vuitton have done a fantastic job in enabling us to develop the production and the number of items they put into the stores in a tremendous way. First, with the same level of atelier, and after that, by opening up new ateliers. So they've done a very good job, and they've created flexibility, and that enables us to grow at double-digit levels in volume terms, and it's been going on for a while, which probably 10 years ago wouldn't have been thinkable. So that's I think we've done a very good job there, and we will carry on monitoring the production capabilities, adding up new atelier in France when we think it makes sense and where we think it makes sense. Your second question on product category, you mentioned ready to wear and men women. As you said, I mean, it's not the biggest business of all at Vuitton, but we had equivalent growth rate at a very, very high level. I mean, we are very satisfied with both the women and the men business. They are of similar sizes all together, but the growth rate is more or less the same at very high level. So it's very satisfactory. As far as online is concerned, the online business is growing fast, but obviously we only provide details on a group-wide basis, not on a brand-by-brand basis. And as you know, online at Vuitton is purely Vuitton.com.
Thank you very much.
We have no further questions, sir.
Okay, so thank you very much. I have no further remarks to make. I just thank you for attending this call, and I look forward to discussing with you first half figures toward the end of July. Thank you and good afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.